This is Beyond the Wall, a Game of Thrones LCG podcast brought to you by Istril and Darknotch. We'd like to thank Fantasy Flight Games for our hobby and their continued support, Drew Dallas at Card Game DB for our hosting, and the AGOT community as a whole for making this possible. Let us take you beyond the wall.
Welcome to another episode of Beyond the Wall. Today we're going to have a short intro, and then we're going to have a retrospective of 5.0 to 5.01, a chat about organizing big tournaments, and then finally some closing remarks.
All right, John, so this is episode 27, and we're recording early because we have a fairly busy weekend.
Yeah, we're going to Nationals, and people are already at my house. So my house has become a drop-in zone for several metas.
So the fact that we're recording early means we can't tell you how Canadian Nationals went, we can't tell you how the Brawl at Crossroads Inn in Newington went, or how the Stoke event on Bowed and Bent Unbroken went this weekend. But those are the only three I know of. So hopefully by the time this airs, those stats will be up in the annals.
Yes, if they're diligent.
So even though we're early, what news has happened since our last official episode?
CP5 got its official release.
We released our
bonus episode. Yeah. There's the Winter Game Night kits that came out from FFG. This has some Jon Snow art in it. It's pretty sweet.
I don't know. I wasn't a big fan. First of all, I'm a little confused by the fact that they're calling it a Winter 2014 tournament kit. Previously, they've been calling these, like, game night kits or regional kits or store championships. So I don't know what a winter kit is.
Yeah, it's a new one.
And then the other thing is that I don't really like that art for Ygritte. She should be holding a spear and so on. I'm not really going to use that many copies of the Jon Snow. So really, it's only the Winds of Winter bit I'm actually interested in.
Which, yeah, I like Winds of Winter. I like this. I'd have a Jon Snow. And the Ygritte's a nice mat, actually. I like that mat.
Yeah. What else has happened this week? 2C1C just released their spoiler for Robert Baratheon, so we won't rehash that ground on this cast, but check out their cast in the first segment or the first little bit of their cast. They talk about it.
I think the rules have finally come up for the new 40K game, which is kind of cool. They've been giving tidbits here and there, but I think the full set is up.
The main reason I wanted to put this on our list of things to discuss is because I had to read through the rules and the way that they're broken down. There's a sort of learn-to-play guide, which has some basic rules and you know, timing structure for each phase a little bit. But whenever you want to find out what a specific keyword does or what, you know, the word first planet means or whatever, you go to the reference book, which is like a whole bunch of defined terms and defined timing charts. And I really like that breakdown. And I know that they've been sort of leaning towards it with their last couple of games. And I hope if there ever is an AGOT reboot that it will follow a similar format, that it will have essentially a complete rulebook, which is basically like a reference guide where you want to look up the word shadows and you look it up and it's there rather than section 2.3.4 on triggered effects or whatever.
Right. That's cool. So our contest winner... Right?
Yeah.
Or Blackwater Bay.
That's Vladislav. He's from Latvia. When we found out that he'd won and had guessed correctly, that we contacted him. He's reached out to us, given us his address, and we should be sending out his prize this weekend, I believe.
So, which will probably take a little while to get there.
It'll probably take a little while to get there, like, but he did tell me he was on vacation for 2 weeks, so I think we're okay. So congratulations to Vladislav for that.
We got some tournament data, right?
A ton of tournaments. We mentioned this last time, but season for the 5.01 season went out with a bang, and that last weekend had so many tournaments. We had Louisville, which was won by a Martassian. We had Genova in Italy, which was won by a Martel Venomous Blade. We had the Distrito Federal in Mexico, which you promised me you'd get the stats for.
Yeah, I didn't promise, but I said I'd try. Oh. And I still haven't because I haven't gone on the Facebook page. whatever that feed comes from.
The group in Manila is sending me their stats, but they haven't done so yet. So Sorry, I don't actually know what won that. We did get to see the streams of the DC Regional, so I definitely know what won that. That's a deck that has, I think, 5 restricteds now that 5.2 is legit. Six?
Six.
What are the six? I'm thinking Burning, Mummers, Desperate Measures, Maiden, Blessed by the Maiden, and Ariane.
And Castell.
That can't be right. You can't have Burning and Castellan.
I don't know. They said six. I didn't look at this list.
Okay, well, I don't know what the sixth one is.
Steven is here at my house right now, and he was at DC, and he told me that they told him six restricted cards.
Six restricted cards. Well, we won't be seeing that deck again.
Not in that iteration, for sure.
No, and then we had... So that was a Martell Conquest Lanny, if you couldn't figure it out from the string of restricted cards. We had the German Language Card Pool Tournament in Koblenz, the regional, and that was won by Abera TMP.
Yep.
I have no news out of the regional in Australia, the New South Wales regional. But
you know, Justin.
There were two. Yeah, I have pestered him. Well, he's not in that specific region, but stats out of Australia haven't been very forthcoming, except Tasmania, which actually did send us the stats because they're amazing. So
that's because they're better than the rest of Australia.
That's right. But we did get two stats for two tournaments that used the 5.2 FAQ.
And that was the Battle of the Blackwater Bay, which everyone watched. Stark and a Mirror one. And then Helsinki was a...
Finland, yeah. A Martell No Agenda Venomous Blade took that tournament. So those are the first two data points, and hopefully by the time you're listening to this, there'll be another three in to get you ready for Gen Con. Aside from that, given all the news this weekend, I really want to take a little extra second to thank the people at DC Regional and the people at the Blackwater Bay. So that was Cybilia for DC and Tagore and James. They had streams set up so we could specifically watch it. And as well, in some cases, they gave a running commentary. The DC one had an overlay telling you the names of the players, the houses, the agendas, the standings. Very, very handy stuff. I love to be able to watch when I can't play. And nowadays, I can't play very often. So...
Yeah, I really enjoy it, too. Just being able to pop in and take a look at board state and stuff is fun.
Yeah. So I hope more tournaments follow in that trend. I think it's excellent, and I think it allows us to all get invested in these tournaments, even if we're a long ways away. All right, so by the time you're listening to this, we'll have moved squarely into the new meta of FAQ 5.2. There will be no more regionals with the old FAQ. And one of the ways I like to pay homage to the previous FAQ is, of course, by looking at all the numbers.
Because numbers are fun, right, Alex?
Numbers are fantastic, but a lot of people have used the annals, a lot of people have made very good use out of it, a lot of people have contributed, and I think it's worth going over some of the broad strokes conclusions, and some of the stuff you might not have thought about.
Oh, can we give out, like, awards to different things in the annals so at least it's exciting?
I can think of my first one. My first would be a... what's a negative award? Like a
demotion, you mean?
Is there...
The Unhappy Skull
like
Award.
Our Darwin Awards and the Ig Nobel Prizes. There are names for these major ones. But
We should have a name for ours, then.
Can you think of one that isn't just
the Unhappy Skull Award?
The Unhappy Skull Award.
Yeah, it's a crying skull, the saddest of all skulls.
It makes me sad. Well, I would give my Unhappy Skull Award to, oddly enough, the Midwest. Iowa, Missouri, and Tulsa. Well, it's not really Midwest, but we have prominent people in the Game of Thrones community there, prominent metas, they had big tournaments, and all three of them wound up submitting either incomplete data or, in the case of Iowa, no data at all. I'm very disappointed.
Wow, that is depressing.
I know, and it's a bit of a shame because 2C1C actually started an initiative like this, collecting data and then talking about it on the cast, which was fantastic. But unfortunately, of the tournaments in that region that people from that cast attended, it just couldn't get me the full data. So that's my unhappy skull.
That's a pretty depressing award. So what other awards do you have?
Well, would you care to guess who had the largest regional?
DC.
You're actually right, but you're right by a tiny, tiny margin. I initially heard that DC only had 46, so I thought they were second to Stoke in the UK, but apparently DC had 48, so they won by one attendee as the largest regional of the season.
Those guys always just squeak out the win.
I think they manufactured, they put buy in their data points, and they're actually at 47.
Tying. So what's their prize? What is their award?
What would be an award for having a lot of people? China?
You're really falling behind on the names of your awards.
I know. I didn't think of giving names to awards. I didn't think of giving awards.
I'd like to give out the Giant Underwear Award.
Giant Underwear Award. And this is an award for what exactly?
It's Rick Robb. He's the person that won. That's his name online. But he won the Blackwater Bay with his Stark deck. And the reason I think he should have Giant Underwear is because I don't think he can put on his current underwear with balls so big, because, I mean, the guy didn't play Valor.
He did not play Valor. It's true. That, to be fair, that was FAQ 5.2, so that he may still get challenged for that award in the next annals. We'll see.
You're right.
What else do I have? Actually, before we jump into the other details, I really want to say that when I first did the annals for 4.2, I was collecting data as much as I could get, but I had no idea how much of the overall data I was actually getting. You know, I had some 50-something tournaments, but I don't know how many tournaments actually happened in that season.
Right, and but now you actually had a list of all the regionals, so this must have made your OCD so happy.
It did, and even better, I wound up getting data, some of it incomplete, but data from, like, 90% of regionals. And that includes regionals that I only found out about after the fact that weren't officially listed on the FFG site but were regionals, like one in Switzerland, like the one in Argentina that weren't on that list. But if I didn't get any data or I just saw someone post that there was a winner from this regional, I would include it in that count, and we still got about 90% of regionals data. So it really means that the data that you're looking at means something globally. It is representative, which is, you know, a relief.
That's pretty awesome, actually. 90% is a pretty big hit. I think anyone doing any type of survey would be pretty happy to get 90% of responses, basically.
Yeah, obviously I wanted to go up to 100. I want FSG to enforce using the annals, but that doesn't seem terribly likely. What other random stats? So even though we did say that Maryland, the DC regional there with 48 people was the biggest regional, it wasn't the biggest tournament of the season because there were a bunch of nationals and Ghost of Stalag tours and stuff. And the biggest overall tournament of that season for which I have data is the French nationals, which had 111 people in Joust and 118 participants overall. So a class of its own.
Absolutely. In that tournament, MA made a big splash, not just because of the number of people, but because of the type of deck that won that actually caused the emergency FAQ, right?
And the rise of some combo elsewhere as well, including, you know, the Argentina one and the discussion on this cast and the like. So before we jump into houses, agendas, restricted, one last thing on like the number of attendees. How much would you guess the average regional has for attendees?
30.
30. You're pretty close. You're pretty close. The average regional is 22 people, apparently. There are a couple with as little as 4, and some as high as, well, as we said, 47, 48. But the average is 22, and the average is pretty close between the North America and Europe. The Southern Hemisphere is a little lower, so some of those tournaments are a little smaller.
And I would guess that Asia is bigger?
We have very little data from China at all. So I don't know anything there, but if we count, you know, Singapore, and we count, depending on how you want to count, Kuwait, for instance, those are a little smaller.
All right.
So these are probably stats that you can guess, but we'll see how well you do. So what is the house with the most wins, just off the top of your head?
Stark.
Martell actually wins it out, but Stark is second, and Stark is rising while Martell is falling, I think partly because of FAQ 5.01.
Oh, absolutely. I think it. Yeah, it didn't just nerf Martell. Stark was in a really, really good place, and it didn't get hit.
Yeah, exactly. So Martell is actually the head house, not only for the number of wins, but for its qualification ratio still, so the percentage of decks in the field that wind up making the cut. It's also the number one house in popularity. So people are playing what wins, people are playing Martell, or we're playing Martell. And so it was definitely the biggest. So what about the, not counting neutral, because it wins every category, which house do you think has the least wins?
I'm going to say Baratheon, but it might be Lannister.
It's actually Targ. Targ has one less win than Barra.
Oh, probably because it wasn't represented that much.
It was, actually. It was reasonably represented, and it did fairly well in the cut. So about 15% of the people played it, and 16% made the cut. You know, pretty close to an even representation there. But yet, it just couldn't seal the deal. It wasn't winning. So while the qualification ratio of Vera is worse, it doesn't make the cut as often based on the number of people playing it, and the popularity is worse, Targ was the deck that didn't win.
I can understand that because I find a lot of these burn decks have a lot of variants. They're really reliant on securing some kind of draw in most of them, and that can be really tough sometimes if you don't get that early draw. Mm-hmm. For Dragon Pit, however, you know, it has lots of draw, but it seems to have a really tight cost curve that can sometimes give it trouble.
Yep, that's. I mean, Shadows can be quite tricky, and Zolo has come out, and he can mess with that curve even further. I guess that that may be part of it. But honestly, I am surprised, because we did sort of say that Dragon Pit was going to be one of the big decks in the meta. And I think it's still a force, but it never performed as well as I expected it to.
Yeah, I really thought that Targ was going to be a scarier deck, and I don't know why it wasn't, really, because I still think Dragon Pit's in a good place.
Yeah. What about agenda? About the one with the most wins is pretty easy. It's
no agenda.
If you count that. But what about the best qualification ratio? The one that is most likely to make the cut based on how often it's played?
Stark again.
Actually, unlikely to be Stark in either case, because it's. I mean, there are some aberrations down in the ones that are played like two or three times, but of the ones that were played a fair bit. Kings of Summer and Bloodthirst are about tied for how likely they were to make the cut.
Sorry, I thought we were thinking House, not Agenda. Hence the Stark comment.
Oh, okay. No, sorry, at Agenda. And then
I would have guessed Bloodthirst, yeah.
Yeah, and then popularity, no Agenda again. It's got the most wins and it was the most popular. But Kings of Summer, I hadn't seen a ton of, but it doesn't surprise me that much.
No, I had a Kings of Summer I was considering taking to the Montreal Regional. At the very last minute, I decided to go with the Stark. So, well, not the last minute. I built a...
So agendas that are the opposite, the losing agendas, the terrible ones. So the least popular are Treaty of the Isles and Treaty of the South, both with zero people playing them. Not really that surprising, especially with Conquest out now.
The Long Voyage is probably in there somewhere, like pretty low.
It's pretty low, but it's higher than them.
Yeah.
But I'm interested to hear your guess for the agendas with the worst qualification ratio. So the ones where you play this deck, it makes you much less likely to win to enter the cut.
City of Shadows.
Yeah, City of Shadows really actually isn't that bad. It's not played very often, but the people who play it seem to know what they're doing. So it's not actually doing that bad. The ones that really performed very, very badly were A Song of Ice.
Mm-hmm.
It saw a reasonable amount of play, not a ton, and it really, really didn't make the cut very often. It did have a regional win, to be fair, but it did not make the cut very often.
Yeah, I don't love that agenda.
Is A Noble Cause, which I think was played 19 times, not all that many, but only made the cut once. So it definitely... fell flat.
Yeah, I could see that. I think a lot of newer players gravitate to Noble Cause because it's a pretty easy deck to play. But that normally means that when they get into a tournament setting, they might have a lot of fun, but making the cut might be difficult.
I did think that there'd be something with Rivers and A Noble Cause that would click, and I guess it didn't really.
I don't even know if anyone really tried it.
So under restricted cards, which would you say is the most popular restricted card?
Mira.
Yep.
I'm going to stick with my Stark theme. I'm not giving it up.
Stick with your Stark, exactly.
Yeah. And then next I'm going to guess like a plot, like Fear Winner or something.
So, well, the question, so which one has the best qualification ratio? So which, this is not data in the annals, you have to pull it out from the stats there, but crunched the numbers. If you were running any given restricted, which was the one that made you most likely to make the cut?
Well, you told me Martell did really, really well. I'm going to say Venomous Blade.
Venomous Blade is actually really high up there, but the highest by about half again over Venomous Blade is Prince's Plans, which got hit by 5.01. But even with that, and partly because of that, because no one was running it after 5.01,
yeah.
So it was sort of preserved in this awesome state from before. But yeah, if you were running Prince's Plans,
making the cut,
60% more likely to make the cut than running any given normal restricted. But that's obviously over with. So what about the worst one? What do you think the restricted choice that you were the least likely to make the cut with?
Fury of the Lion.
I sort of you're probably right in that it never made the cut or it never got played. Actually,
it was never ever played. Yeah,
but I think it had like two or three maybe entries. I'd have to double check. So I kind of discounted those. I looked for ones that were played and were just a really bad choice.
Okay, so that it had to be played and a bad choice. I'm having trouble thinking of bad restricted cards that would be count as played. Why don't you give me a choice, Alex? Like,
well,
A, B, C.
I'll tell you it's a plot.
It's a plot?
Yeah.
Man. The city plot.
Which, Manny?
Yeah. Not Manny. Yeah, Manny. Sorry, yeah, Manny.
Negotiations was much worse. You did not want to be running negotiations in this meta. And I think that somewhat makes sense, given the draw that you could get from... Yep. From other plots, from Mummers. And
that was like the city plot I was thinking of.
Ah, okay. Yeah, of course. Of course. You just hedged your bet. You're like, two of them are city plots.
Sweet.
And what about the least popular restricted card? The one that saw zero play.
I'm going to say the Baratheon 571.
Fury of the Stag?
Yeah.
No, I did see some play. Tin Link saw no play at all.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Not that surprising as numbers. So are there any other sort of questions or stats that you'd have that I should dig up?
I want to think about stats from Blackwater Bay, because to me, those are the stats that are more interesting, because they're talking about the new world. So I'd like to take a look at the stats associated with that tournament, because there is one that I think is just impressive. And that is the percentage of people that played Lannister and then did not make the cut.
Well, 100% of people who played Barra didn't make the cut.
Right, but there was only 10 people playing it, right?
That's true.
There was 21 Lannister players.
And 21 Lannister player and one made the cut.
One slipped through.
Yeah.
That to me is scary. That means a lot of people thought that Lannister was going to be pretty good in the new meta and then discovered otherwise very quickly.
So I'd be wary of saying that about the new meta in general, because to me, they had like 4 days to build their deck. And, you know, it takes longer than that to judge a meta, to refine. If you had a deck like the old way and that was what you were sort of settled on and then it was earthshaken, you know, you don't have time to really build a brand new deck type that would emerge for the meta. So what I think you saw a lot of, and I think the stats sort of speak for it, is decks that survived almost intact, that
Stark,
were already solved.
Greyjoy, yeah.
So the Maester's Path, for instance, the Stark No Agendas, things like that, that, you know, it was easy to have those built before. You already knew how to play them, and if they weren't hit by the FAQ, then you could get them up.
Well, I mean, it's not like Lannister was hit by the FAQ.
That's true. And we did, but the way it gained from the FAQ was also somewhat indirect.
It indirectly gained because it has card advantage naturally, and therefore, you know, the reduction of rivers and the other houses losing some of that card advantage gave it an advantage, but you'd still be able to use those old archetypes, those old builds, like almost verbatim from Lannister.
You would, so you're right. I am somewhat surprised to see it perform poorly. I think part of that, so historically Lanny has had a pretty good matchup against Stark, but I think that's gotten worse pretty much since the onset of Grand Theft Location. I think a direct assault on a Golden Tooth Mines is basically game, and you know, I think that may be a large part of why Stark has risen over Lannister in what was traditionally a matchup that favored Lanny.
Yeah, I have to agree. I've played test that match a few times, and that's basically the way it is. So, you know, I'm looking at more and more moving away from Gold Tooth Mines as my source of draw in Lannister and moving towards unique locations that can't be stolen.
So I guess the Mandarin.
Like the Mandarin. Yeah, so maybe two of the Mandarin and
But even
Tomin
then, it's hard to run. For instance, you could run Caches, but you're going to lose them to Mira.
Yeah, this is the thing. So I think Lannister... Actually, a house that used to have this great reliable draw is now in a position where they still have that draw. They just can't use it against one of the most prominent decks currently. That puts them in a tough place.
I don't know how tough, though. I know Aaron had mentioned this on the cast, the last cast. When the new FAQ came out, Alvaro was super excited.
Yes.
And Alvaro basically is only ever excited when he's got Lanny ideas. So I'm sure that once we start seeing some results out of Padres, out of Spain, and we're going to see that Lannister climb a little bit. And once people have a template to build around for how to really solve this Lannister,
that's it.
I think it will build. But
I think the old Lannister decks, the templated ones that people could take to a tournament, like you said, with 3 or 4 days notice, don't do that well against Grand Theft location. So they have to rebuild from, you know, the base, ground zero.
Some other stats that I was fairly impressed with out of Blackwater Bay. I was somewhat surprised to see no Barra make the cut. I really expected people to be able to take an existing Barra deck that had been lying on the back burner and put in Mel's schemes, because it's very easy to fit into most of these decks. And then you can add in Fury, if you like, which is a great anti-Rush, great anti-Martathion, which still exists, that kind of stuff. So I was expecting to see Barra do surprisingly well, and I was wrong.
Yeah, I thought Barra would have had a better showing as well. I guess that Stark is too much for them. Barra does rely on trying to keep that board presence, and Stark is running a few knights, so, you know, that can hurt the knight build. It can normally start off a lot stronger than Barra, and if it can hold that early board presence, it's trouble. It is interesting that there's a couple of Stark builds, and we got to see two of them in the final at Blackwater. The fact that, you know, there was Grand Theft Location, and then what I like to call Cowboy, which is basically the super draw Stark deck. The reason it's a cowboy, it's like in the Wild West, the person who draws fastest wins is the idea. But it's great that, you know, these very distinct builds from the same house, it shows a healthy meta is what it does. You know, even if they're both Stark, they're pretty different in the way they play.
Okay. Speaking of surprises in the restricted cards, because they were sort of talking about choosing crossing the numbers forward, only three people ran that, which surprised me somewhat. But what actually surprises me is that a lot of people ran the Maester's Path. There were 7 entries, 3 in the cut. It did very, very well.
Yeah.
But people are still running Mirror Reed out of Stark. I mean, there were 11
Absolutely.
Instances of Mirror Reed. And Mirror Reed is tough for Maesters to handle.
Yeah, and I guess They must be playing around it or just sucking it up, which is surprising to me.
I guess many of those Maesters were out of Targ, and they have a couple opportunities to
target kill the Mirror is what they do, right? They take the hit on the chains, they can cycle the chains because they're Targ back onto their Maesters, and they can kill Mirror so that she can't just keep doing it round after round.
Yeah, it's obviously not all that easy.
Suck the hit and kill Mirror and then try to get your chains back.
Mm-hmm.
That's dangerous, though. I think we will see more City, though, and I think some people at Blackwater Bay were running them, and we'll see more and more as the national season goes on.
Yes, yeah, so one of the really nice counters to Cities, which was Art of Seduction, got restricted. So,
yeah.
I think other counters to Cities. It can be quite easy to beat them at Initiative, which can give you a lot of control over the game. Cities have always been powerful, but they are fairly slow.
Yes.
Although maybe not with Wheels Within Wheels, but that's another topic for another day. So let's see where the meta takes us. The lead-up to Gen Con is very, very short, so everybody watch the data closely. As you may know, the Battle of Blackwater Bay recently wrapped up, and you've probably seen tournament reports from the winner. We've talked previously about how he wasn't running Valor. But rather than rehash what he's written really quite well on CardGameDB and on AGOT Cards, we thought we'd do something slightly different as a tournament report and talk to the tournament organizers about setting up an event of this magnitude.
So we're joined today by the two tournament organizers, Tom and James. Hi, guys.
The first question that I have is, where did this all start, the idea to do part of the Road to Stalic tour, to do it in London? Is this something that you guys talked over with Wolfgang at last year's Stalic?
Yeah, it's actually Wolfgang approached us and said, hey, you guys are obviously passionate about the game. You've come to Starlight multiple times. You both agreed to be judges. I think you'd be suitable people to try and get a tournament in the UK. We were obviously very interested in that.
I mean, I think the reason he approached this was just because we were by far the most prominent members of the UK meta in terms of presence and solid presence. And the UK was the largest European country that at that point had no Road to Stalic stuff.
So then what were the early steps in trying to get this to happen, to find venues, to make people come?
Secure prize support. You guys did some interesting stuff with the play mats and house cards and stuff, so tell us about that.
Well, the first thing we did was we had to look for the venue. That's the difficult bit about London. London is not a cheap city, as any of you who may have been to London will attest. But luckily, our local gaming store, Dark Sphere, was in the process of moving from its old and rather cramped premises to a much, much larger space that happened to be underneath the railway arch. We just approached the owner, and he was happy to rent it out to us for the weekend for a relatively cheap price.
Once we got the venue sorted, we thought that the next thing we needed to do was to entice people to come. So we had a few ideas sort of kicking about ourselves. We'd seen that a lot of the European tournaments had done alternate art house cards, and that was something that we were definitely interested in doing. And also at Starlake last year, the Polish guys were showing off the really nice playmats that they'd made for last year's Flea Bottom Fracas, and that had enticed us as well. So what we did was we put up a couple of polls on Card Game DB, sort of trying to get an idea from people, like, what sort of prize support would you like? How much would you be willing to pay to correspond to the prize support that you want? And that gave us a lot of very valuable information about sort of what price points to hit, which gave us an idea of how much we could afford to spend on the prize support. And it sort of came from there, and it sort of grew very organically, let's say.
So I've seen a lot of people do alternate house cards of various kinds, and it seems to be one of the popular things. Where do you go to get cards like that printed? This is not something I've seen advertised anywhere.
So the process of designing the house cards, first of all, Tagore and I discussed sort of the ideas behind what we might want for the house cards. And then once we settled on our plan of sort of maybe having something a bit sort of comic and cynical and having death scenes from the houses, once we decided on that, we sort of put notices up on Facebook and a couple of other places to try and attract artists. And we were quite lucky in that one of our local players, Lowell Craven, his wife Amy and her colleague Glenn are very talented artists and were interested and are Thrones fans. And we contacted them. We commissioned them to create the art. And personally, I feel they did a great job. I know a lot of other people agree. And once we finished designing the art, it was one of the things we were possibly a bit slack about was the printing process itself. But luckily for us, they knew where they could get a pretty good deal on printing, I guess, because they were used to sort of creating art. They knew the printing side of it a lot more intimately than we did. But they sort of said, okay, we found a place where we can get it printed for such and such an amount. Does that sound good? And we knew from scouting around that that was a good deal, and we went with it.
We advertised for the playmats at around the same time, and there was a lady in my local gaming group, Buddy Kate. She was very interested. She actually came up with the idea for the playmat of having Danny and Drogon just side by side. Yeah, so she basically drew that in her Art Nouveau style. And we got in contact with another British gaming store, Patriot Games, up in Sheffield, to print the playmats. I think were very, very popular.
The reason we knew to look for them is because I'd gone up there for their regional earlier in the year, and they gave out playmats there that were original designs for the top performing person from each house. So we knew that they had the facilities to print, and so we inquired about it and again found out they were quite cheap. So I'd say a lot of sort of the process of organizing it is you sort of have to build up these contacts all around the place. Because, you know, we got our mats printed off in Sheffield. We got the house card art designed by friends from a nearby meta, but not our meta. We've been playing this game and making friends with people all around the UK and Europe, for that matter, for the last 2 years in my case, and longer intervals, calling your contacts, and it helps you set up the tournament.
Now, I think one of the challenges would be that the UK as a meta is actually fairly new, and it had its first regional season last year and its second this year. So how do you reach out to find all the people?
I think the biggest thing we did, as anyone who listens to this podcast can attest, is we advertised the hell out of the tournament at every opportunity. Like, even back in January, I think one of the very earliest episodes of Beyond the Wall, had an advert for Blackwater Bay in it. And it's just something we've been constantly trying to push because we knew that the greater awareness we gave for the tournament, the more it increased the chance of people coming. So the, at the tournament, there were a lot of Brits who I had never met before just because they come from these isolated meadows of like one or two people and don't necessarily travel a long way for tournaments. But just because we'd spent so long trying to hype the tournament, eventually word got through to them and they turned up and helped up the numbers.
Yeah, I find those tournaments get like a critical mass and then they start to snowball and people start saying like, oh, I got to go because so-and-so's going to be there and I really want to take down that James guy. I want to be able to play versus him. I hear about him all the time. I want to sit across from the table and play a game versus him. And then all of a sudden they're like, oh, my buddy's going. I might as well go. And next thing you know, you get a great turnout like you guys did.
Yeah, and on that note, I just want to very quickly, I may prop Aaron and Sandy from America and also Mike from Canada, just because when you get these players, I mean, we got a lot of people from Europe as well, and I'd like to thank everyone who came because the only reason it was a good tournament is because so many people came from so many places. But when you get people traveling so far, it really sort of helps hammer home the impression this is a prestigious tournament. People want to travel to play in it.
So you guys have talked about, you know, how you advertised and your prize support. Were there any hiccups during the tournament? Like, how did you actually run things during the day? What type of, you know, computer program did you use to maybe do the Swiss pairings? Tell us about, you know, the good and the bad of the tournament day from a TO's perspective.
Well, so I was the main person running the tournament because James was playing. We made a deal at the start of the organizing that he'd run the regional and I'd run Blackwater Bay. So we decided to go with official FFG software because we've had experiences of stores using non-FFG software and that has kind of ballsed up some regionals. So we went with 20 Magistrate, which is a fairly iffy piece of software and very, very... Fortunately enough, we had a very lovely local gaming store and lovely owner of the local gaming store, Alexi. He actually wrote code to port results from and pairings from Tournament or Magistrate into the shop's own like pairing system. So at the start of every round, we were able to email approximately half-ish of the players with their pairings, so that really helped the turnaround time. Our main hiccups were the registration, where we had to manually register around 80 people by hand, because even though a lot of people registered online, a lot of them also didn't show up, and there were also two or three people who didn't register online. So that set back the starting time by around 15 minutes, which wasn't too bad. The other major hiccup was we had a lunch break, and we told people to be back at 2:30 sharp, and they came back at 2:50. So it was annoying, and I kind of got a bit annoyed at players. I might have yelled at a few people.
Tagore did basically all of the work on the day. If there was an even number of players, I wouldn't play either. If there was an odd number, then I would play so that there wouldn't be a bye. And as it turned out, there would have been 79, so I played to make it up to a nice round 80. As far as the lunch break thing, that was sort of a minor hiccup, but we'd allowed for that in the time because we'd actually spent a long time discussing the schedule in the week leading up to the tournament, where Tagore wanted us to have a seventh round of Swiss, and I was adamant that we'd stick with six. And eventually, just sort of by stubbornness more than anything else, I won out, with my argument being that it would finish too late if we had a seventh round. And Tagore was saying he thought we'd be able to make it, and I was like, we can't take the chance. And as it turned out, the tournament finished at 10:30 in the evening. So I think, on balance, it was probably just about the right decision.
It's worth noting that the, you know, if you think of true Swiss rounds where you're supposed to play all the way to an undefeated, those are not actually the guidelines that FFG officially gives. In the regional kit, the for a tournament of that size, I think they would have said six Swiss rounds, top 16.
Yep.
So you were following those exactly.
Yeah, it's just a shame for those people that went 4-2 but didn't make the cut. And particularly, we had a particularly nasty situation where 15th, 16th, and 17th all had the same points and the same strength of schedule. So we had to go to their opponents' strength of schedules to determine which order they finished in.
Yeah. It turns out, luckily, that 20 Magistrate actually worked it out for you. It just doesn't show you the working. I don't think it's worth us thanking the other judges who ran tournament.
Yes.
There. So we had another British judge, Wed from Newcastle. We also had Kudzelin from France and Jeff from Spain as judges, because Kudzelin and Jeff are both judges, darling, and they're very knowledgeable about the rules. Probably more so than I am.
Was there any hard to, you know, judgment calls, any rules questions that came up that really swung a game or anything like that?
Not particularly. I think we're quite lucky with that. I think there was only one misruling all day, and that was a question about whether or not a opponent who stalled an Edmir Tully with Mel's favor can still trigger it. I ruled no. Kudlin says it should have been yes, but the Stark player stopped all over the Barrow play anyway.
There was one slightly iffy moment in the one of the top four games, the one that wasn't streamed, where there was an intrigue challenge made and a strength bump applied, and there was a long delay where people thought that maybe the defending player had allowed the challenge to go through. Tagore actually leaned over and pointed out that they hadn't triggered Kingdom of Shadows, and so the winning player knelt it. And then he went to have another action, and then the player who we thought had maybe lost the challenge then tried to play Nightmares on the strength bump, and there was a bit of confusion over whether the challenge had actually finished or not, with him being adamant that he'd never actually passed action. So that was a little hairy, but ultimately sort of it was one of those things where common sense prevails.
Fair enough. So I know that having organized events that aren't specifically related to Thrones, mostly scientific conferences and the like, did you guys get involved in organizing, say, places to stay for people that were nearby, or hotels, or, you know, deals with someone for food, that kind of stuff?
Tagore organized in that he opened up his room to anyone who would fit in it. Yeah, I think part of the problem is that London's a big city, and I don't even live in London. I live north of London. So people were asking me for advice on where to stay. I was happy to give it to them, but the advice I was giving was basically whatever the top option on Google said. As far as food goes, the night before we attempted to host a pre-tournament dinner.
You didn't show up. Is that what happened?
We did show up, but we might have showed up about 2 hours later than it was scheduled to begin. It was an interesting Friday, but thankfully it turns out people are cool and don't have to rely on us to be able to exist in London, and just went to a bar and got very, very drunk. Between Sandy and the Polish guys, you cannot stay sober in their presence. Two last props, which were to Dave Bamford and Dave, I don't know his surname, from Germany, who both brought cameras that allowed us to stream.
I should mention, just on the grounds of streaming, thank you very much for doing that. And the DC Regional was also streaming. This is a great way for those of us who can't be there to live vicariously, to see some Thrones on the weekend, to pretend like we would play better because we can, you know, armchair coach or whatever the technical term is.
And then we've been able to capture the high-quality video that will go up on YouTube as soon as we can be bothered to upload it.
Excellent. All right. Well, thank you very much for giving this perspective on organizing it so that the people who are doing the next one can one-up you and we can continue to get amazing tournaments.
I hope so.
We don't have time to do any closing remarks because we're going to Canadian Nationals. We also don't have time for a snappy sign-off.
Thank you for listening to Beyond the Wall. If you have any comments or would like to be featured on the cast, please let us know by email at beyondthewallpodcast@gmail.com or through Facebook at Beyond the Wall Podcast. If you've enjoyed the music, check out more of Antti Martikainen's work at the link embedded in the chapter data. See you all next week.